for a word podcast is brought to you by Naked City Brewery.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 211 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a fantastic episode for you this week. It's so good. It's so good. A guy by the name of Scott Reitherman is going to stop by the backyard here shortly and talk to us about his new project, Pillar Point. He's also going to talk about his love for the New Kids on the Block, the love that he had. Let's clarify, shall we? Yeah. Amongst many, many other things, the old project that he had called Throw Me the Statue, which I was just such a huge fan of. We'll talk about that as well. Great, great new album out, by the way. Self-titled, Pillar Point. You can find it at pillarpointmusic.com. And get yourself a copy, man, because it is so good. It's very, how do I even describe it? It's dancey, and it's upbeat, yet sad at the same time. And if you listen to the lyrics, you'll get what I'm talking about. It is. It's just fantastic, though. It really is a great kind of thought-provoking record. And one of the themes in that record, which we will talk about with Scott, is dealing with loneliness and dealing with the internet. It's been a week since we last talked. And man, I'll tell you what. When you are in a position where you have to go and, as my buddy Luke says, be on your grind, right? You have to go and try to book a different person each week. It can get stressful, and it can get it works out, man. Like, you get people like Scott Reitherman in studio, and it's fantastic, and you have a great conversation, which you'll hear shortly. But sometimes it just doesn't work out, right? And you can tell in the email that they don't want to even, you know, give you the time of day. You know, I mean, if they answer you, that's one thing, but sometimes you don't even get an answer. Well, anyway, we've gotten turned down twice. Well, canceled on and turned down, by the Breeders and Bismarcky. Bismarcky had to cancel his national tour because for reasons. So he couldn't come on the show. We had him all lined up. I was super excited about that. That's not working out anymore. And the Breeders, man, they just didn't. I've been working on that one, Kim Kelly deal. I've been working on that for like 4 years. Four fucking years, man. And I thought I had it this time. I thought I had it in the bag, you know? I had some stuff. I had, some bullets in the chamber that I could bring to the PR people. Be like, we've been, you know, since we last talked, we've been featured on the cover page of the Seattle Weekly. We've been, you know, all over the place. Nothing. They don't want to do it. Yeah, right. Well, they probably don't want to do it, actually. I mean, yeah, that's that, right? Yeah. But that's, it's depressing, man. It's depressing when that stuff doesn't work out. But then you get this, like, you get a great guest like Scott, who's going to be coming up here soon, and everything's hunky-dory. Right? But then you get back on the internet. Then you get back on the internet, folks. And if you're like me and you go through fits and spurts on like your social media stuff, right? I go through spurts where I'm posting stuff, posting little jokes, maybe retweeting or reposting, sharing somebody's political rant. But that's you know, predominantly that's the extent that I go to. But man, I have been getting really drawn in to a lot of bullshit on the internet lately. The internet is not your friend, by the way. The internet is not your friend, right? This is something we'll talk about a little bit later. I heard a great quote. I heard a great quote today. By none other than John Roderick. He's been on this show a couple times. He's got his own great show. I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you where I heard this quote, but on Roderick on the Line, great podcast with John Roderick and Merlin Mann. John Roderick and Merlin Mann. Great, great conversations on that show. And John said something on the latest episode. Oh, what did he say? He said the entire internet is now just one big comment section. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's the gist of what he said. And he's totally right. And it made me think a lot today. Like I had a lot of time to think during my day job today about that as I was listening. And he's totally right, man. He's totally right. The internet is not your friend, and it has turned into this just insane, insane comment section, right? Everybody's pissed. Everybody's pissed off about something. Right? And sometimes, I mean, it just feels like in some cases are warranted, but in a lot of cases, it feels like it's manufactured, right? Manufactured to get likes, manufactured to get retweets and favorites and stars and people to read your blog, because really all of it is about getting more attention, right? I mean, shit, that's what I'm doing here. That's what I'm doing here, right? I mean, that's the ultimate irony in all this, is I'm talking about this to you on a podcast, which is available on the internet. You can't get away from it. I'm steeped in it now. I'm stuck, man. I'm stuck. You know, because I'm getting away from my point, but I'll finish this thought. I'm not a famous person. I can't be like a Patton Oswalt and just quit Twitter, right? Because he's got a huge fan base already. They're going to seek out what he's doing. People are probably on his mailing list, and they check in with him from time to time. They're subscribed to some sort of RSS feed that they get a newsletter through telling them that he's coming to their town. I'm not that guy. I got to stay there. I got to stay back in the suburbs on Facebook deal with all the baby pictures and everything like that. And then post every Monday that we've got a new show up with, somebody awesome. And do a lot of people listen to it? No, but we get a fair amount of people listen to this show. And we love that. We really do, man. It's become a second job. It's a source of income, and it's a source of a lot of pleasure for me, right? So I'm not going to quit that. But man, do I need to quit getting involved and getting angry at stuff that I have no power over and stuff that may not be real, right? I mean, for example, when the whole thing in Ferguson started, right? There was a lot of stuff coming through on Twitter and in Facebook. And one of the things in particular, normally I can stay away from this stuff, but man, I was so worked up over this. The shooting in Ferguson made me so fucking angry. I was so mad. I wanted to do something, right? I wanted to do something to help. The only thing that I could do here in Washington State was to, you know, comb through some of the information and repost it, right? Repost it and tell the world what was going on in Ferguson as best that I could. And the one thing that I chose to repost was a screen grab of somebody, of a woman who was supposedly the wife of the county sheriff in Ferguson. And the screen grab was of her Facebook page and her post. And the post stated something to the effect of, all the rioters are animals and we should treat them as such and mow them all down. Something to that effect, right? And I was like, I was so angry. I was like, racism exists. We need to know about this. My coworkers need to know about this. And so, of course, I reposted it. I didn't look into it at all. And it got a bunch of people commented on it. A bunch of people liked it, of course, you know. And it got shared, 10 times or something like that off of my personal Facebook page. It made me feel good inside. It made me feel like I was doing something, right? I was part of the fight. And then, of course, a good friend of mine posts in the comment section a Snopes article saying that this is fake. It's been doctored. And it's using somebody's real name and real picture. So I go to her Facebook page and I'm looking for the, I'm like, oh shit, what did I just do, right? What did I just do? Like, I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't thousands and thousands of reposts on mine, but I contributed to something that sucks. Something that sucks about the internet. And that, you know, God, there's so much stuff, right? We're so quick to jump on people for being sexist, racist, homophobic, rich. I mean, anything you can think of, anything that you can think of that you can get pissed off about. Chemtrails, damn it. The conspiracy theories that are going around the internet on Facebook and Twitter too are just amazing, man. Amazing what people will believe without checking the facts. And I am that person. I was so embarrassed. I took the post down, of course. Like, I deleted everything. But what I should have done, what I kick myself for right now, and that's part of the reason why I'm telling the story, is that what I should have done was I should have said, hey, sorry, everybody. A post that I made earlier was fake. It was fake. I was duped. Because I was so worked up and I was so frothy at the mouth about this situation that I just posted something without checking the facts, right? And nobody's doing that. Nobody's even reading a fucking solid article about anything. They're just getting worked up about what they see in the headline and not reading the body of text that comes along with it. And they're not doing their research and they're accusing people, real people, of doing things that they probably didn't do or they didn't mean to. They may need to be educated, but they don't need to be yelled at, right? And that's what the internet has turned into. That's what the social media, anyway, has turned into. Your Tumblrs, your blogs, your podcasts, your everything, man, including this show. Like, I'm yelling at you right now about what I don't want people to yell at, to yell about. But, oh, man, it's just crazy, and it's infuriating. God. But I can't quit it, right? I can't quit it. As you can tell, man, I am, like, having some serious inner turmoil here. Some serious inner turmoil about this whole situation. It's crazy. It's just crazy. I feel like we, this generation, we're making the world a worse place, almost, right? I mean, there's great information out there. And some people deserve to get called out on shit, right? For example, one person that deserves it. I will say that a friend of ours, Stephanie Drury from Stuff Christian Culture Likes, she has been battling the Mars Hill Church for a long time, right? And for great reasons. For great reasons. Which hopefully we can get her on the show here soon and chat about, because there's a lot of shit that's been going down with that. That's one that the cause is just, right? That I would say, the cause is just also on calling people out for being sexist and calling people out for catcalling and all that stuff. But are we going too far with it? Right? If you approach somebody on the street immediately yelling at them, they're either going to think you're crazy or they're going to immediately get into a fighting stance, right? Because you're attacking them. You're basically attacking them. And that's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm seeing all around us on the internet, is that's what's going on. We're just going into attack mode. We're not going into talk mode. We're going straight into attack mode. How do we turn that back? How do we dial that down? Are we too far into this? I think we might be, man. I think we might be. It's scary. It's scary. What are my girls going to grow up in here? I don't know. It kind of freaks me out because the internet has just become this huge bully pulpit, right? For people anonymously to go after others and to make it go viral. Like, that's the scariest part, right? That's the scariest part. This stuff really does a lot of damage. A lot of damage to people who don't necessarily deserve it, right? So just remember that. The next time you post something on Facebook, you know, at least do some research. And just remember, you know, whatever you're posting, if it's about a singular person, that person is real. And it's not just a two-dimensional picture on Facebook, right? That's what I'm going to try to do anyway. That's what I'm going to try to do. I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. You can email me, aaron@air-raid.net. That's A-A-R-O-N, A-A-R-O-N at air-raid.net. And you can find out more about the Air Raid podcast at air-raid.net. Click on the archives tab and find all 211 episodes there for your listening pleasure with Macklemore, Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, Pete Holmes, Death Cab for Cutie. It's all there. Anyway, let's get going with this. But first, we want to remind you guys that we get a sponsorship from the wonderful people at NakedCityBrewing.com and Naked City Brewery and Tap House here in lovely North Seattle. If you are a Seattleite or you live in the area, I urge you guys to come and visit this place. Naked City is located at 8564 Greenwood Avenue North here in Seattle, Washington. And they've got some great beers and some great food. And now they're also doing these awesome shows. Earlier this week, they did Eric Anderson from Cataldo, right? Right there in the screening room for $10. Oh, my God. You guys, if you didn't make it to that show, you missed out. Because it was probably awesome. I did not make it, and I realized that I missed out, okay? I know this. We're also going to be doing another live show coming up, so keep your ears open for that. But in the meantime, go like them on Facebook or follow them on Twitter. I know I just told everybody not to do that kind of stuff, but you know what? This is for a good cause, right? This is one of those good causes, because they help us keep the lights on here at the Backyard Studios. And we want to help them out as well by sending you guys to a wonderful place. So if you do go or like them on Facebook, you know, tell them that the Air Raid podcast sent you, because that helps us out in the long run. Okay? Helps everybody. Let's be nicer to each other, shall we? Shall we? Everywhere. In person and online and everywhere in between. And let's listen to some great music by Pillar Point right now. Let's do that. Okay? Let's get into it. We've rambled on long enough. Okay, we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Scott Reitherman of the band Pillar Point. This song is called Eyeballs off the new album, which is available at pillarpointmusic.com. Go and check it out. This is Eyeballs. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
one for you, I guess.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, you gotta cut it out. Cut it out of your life.
It's really cracking your teeth.
It's like cracks.
Oh.
Like you said, they're just like hairline little fractures from, you know, and I grind my teeth too, so it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's just making everything worse.
Dude.
Don't chew on ice. I still do it though.
Yeah.
I still do it. Yeah.
It's tough not to.
The best place.
It's tough for guys like us, man.
Yes. Right?
Tough.
It is, man. Let me tell you. If you can find a good AM PM where they have like the nugget ice.
Yeah.
That's the best chewing ice.
Yeah, it breaks right down there. Pretty easy.
Yeah. 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 Your teeth are probably safe if you're chewing.
Why is that? Ice is different from ice?
The chewable, the little crunch ice?
Yeah,
stuff?
Why it's does like that little, stuff?
I don't know.
Is it not cold enough?
No. I think it's less hard because it's just like almost like a slushy. It's just like a compacted like snowball.
Okay.
A little bit.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, yeah.
The little crunchable, munchy ice?
Yeah, but now I'm tripping out on the experience of chewing that and how it just instantly turns into like a slushy
yeah.
when you chew it.
That's why it's so great.
It's great. It is great.
Yeah, because you don't have to actually find an actual slushy machine. You can have just the nugget ice.
Right.
Yeah. That is actually on top of... I've got two dreams, Scott.
Okay.
Two major goals, life goals. One is to have a full-size Boba Fett somewhere here back in the studio.
Wow.
That would be a good one, right?
That's pretty big.
If you walked back into the studio and saw a life-size Boba Fett, what would you think?
I mean, full-on weirdo, but great.
I'll go with that. Yeah,
I would want to see. I would want to see the full back tattoo next. Probably.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Just a huge Millennium Falcon right on my back. And then the second one is to have one of those machines that makes that munchable,
right.
crunchable ice.
That's probably more attainable.
You think so?
I mean, maybe. Yeah.
Well, Scott Reitherman of Pillar Point joining me here in the backyard. Thank you so much for coming out, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah,
dude.
I'm sorry it's a little hot in here.
Yeah.
And I have to say that every episode throughout the summer because then it just lets people in on how much we're both sweating.
Yeah, the vibe.
Yeah,
It's a little moist. It's okay, man. I just got back from a week in Chicago, and I was just sweating at all times.
Really?
Yeah, so this is actually mellow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's much more humid over there.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess if you grow up with it, you just, you know, you deal. I don't know. I didn't. And so it stresses me out.
Oh, yeah.
I don't feel like myself. But then I hate air conditioning culture, too.
Yeah.
I hate going from one extreme to the other. And air conditioning, after a while, just kind of starts to give me a headache or something.
Well, it dries you out. It gave my, I took my daughter out for kind of like a day with dad.
Yeah.
Last weekend, and it was so hot outside, and we went in, we ate in a restaurant, and it had air conditioning, and she got a bloody nose.
No way.
Yeah, dried her out so much, it just, like, started bleeding all over the place.
Damn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I haven't had that.
Me neither, thankfully. Yeah.
But yeah, you wake up in a room after you've been sleeping, and it's just, you just need, like, 2 pints of water.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
And then you just go out and you start sweating and you need like 5 pints of water.
right.
But it was cool. I had a good time in Chicago, actually. I got to see a Cubs game. My third,
oh, nice.
Third Wrigley game.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Right on.
And I thought it was super hot and muggy, like I've just been elaborating on. But I remember not sweating the entire game this time.
Really?
Last two times I was there, it was a night game. This was even a day game most recently.
Yeah.
But even in a night game in the middle of July in Chicago, you just sweat the whole time you're sitting there. Somehow people live like that. I don't know. And play baseball like that. That's crazy.
I you're slowly acclimating to it, apparently.
Maybe that's what it
like
is.
Like over the years of going and touring over in the East and
yeah.
On the East Coast, like you're slowly acclimating to this stuff. Were you on tour? Is that why you were
No,
there?
I was just out there for a wedding, actually. Just a visit.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you were actually kind of on vacation then?
Yeah, it was vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's when I don't mind when it gets real, when I'm in a really hot, humid place.
Yeah.
When I'm on vacation. If I'm having to work in that, I hate it.
Yeah.
It just sucks.
Yeah.
That's why I'm ready for it to start raining again.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally, man.
Yeah.
We just did a summer tour about, we got home about a month ago.
Right.
And pr- probably, you know, I don't know, maybe a quarter of the places you go, you walk in and it's like air conditioning doesn't really work that well.
Right.
Or it doesn't exist.
It's just working in that one corner.
Yeah. You're just like, you're kidding me. We got to load this whole van worth of gear in here and play. Yeah. And yeah. So.
The life of a musician.
Dude, yeah.
Where did you grow up, man?
I grew up in the California Bay Area.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Little
coastal town called Half Moon Bay.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I've been there.
Yeah.
So, beautiful place.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. Yeah. I loved it.
So, it's a little bit more, I mean, more, I don't know, what would you call that? Like, ocean temperature. Temperate.
Yeah, it's super.
Half Moon Bay.
It's very mild, I guess. Very, yeah. I mean, it's really fog, it's locked in fog a lot of the year. So, I grew up, you know, being kind of comfortable with like 50 and 60 degrees.
Sure. And moist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that marine air, man.
Yeah. 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 I grew up on the Puget Sound, so I'm used to that as well. Okay. Yeah, totally. Totally.
So, yeah.
Same type of climate, just not as foggy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long did you live there?
My whole life until I went to college. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, you know, 0 to 18.
Cool.
Same house. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And your parents still live there?
Nope. Mm-mm. No. No. But they're both still in the Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Man, did they feel that earthquake recently?
Mm. Yeah. My dad was in town, and he got woken up by it.
Uh-huh.
But my mom was not. She was on a business trip. She was out of town. So, but everybody was fine.
Oh, yeah.
It was like...
Nothing even got really damaged, did it?
No. I mean, it sounds like... I mean, it was lucky it was in 3 a.m. because... Napa probably, like, people would have been strolling the streets and,
oh sure,
you know, old buildings would have crumbled down on top of them if it were in the afternoon, you know. They would have been too sauced to get out of the way. But yeah, I mean I read that they lost, or that the reported damages of all of everybody's claims or whatever were something in like 4 or 5 billion.
Oh really?
Which is nuts.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Yeah, I mean, that must be mostly just Napa. And I would love to know what the breakdown is of, like, structural damage and then just wine that was lost.
Right, right. Yeah, it was just all grapes.
It might be 50-50, right?
It's just all grapes that were lost, right?
Or, like, bottles.
Barrels.
Beautiful wine. Yeah, barrels that just, shatter and explode.
It was all in wine futures.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that sucks. I love wine.
I know, that's the worst. That's just the worst death.
Oh man! So where did music start for you? Did you start playing at a young age there in Half Moon Bay?
It was at summer camp one year. I picked
summer
up
camp.
Guitar.
How old were you?
I was in. I think I was in sixth grade.
Sixth grade.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah, and I came home from summer camp, and my younger brother actually was already taking guitar lessons. So he had like a nylon string guitar. And I just kind of really took to it and wanted to keep going. And so, you know, I learned my Come As You Are, and I learned my Inner Sandman, and I learned...
House of the Rising Sun. Did you use that?
No, I didn't know that one.
Really?
No.
Oh, man.
What else? I mean, I was really into Metallica and Nirvana, and I probably learned... I remember the stuff I had to learn at camp being just stuff that was outside, like Gloria by... Van Morrison?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, like, you know, song I didn't really know.
Sure.
I remember learning things like that in order to learn chords.
Yeah.
Or like Sweet Home Alabama and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so I kept going with it and then started a band in eighth grade with some buddies after much hand-wringing to come up with a band name like you always do, because that's the hardest part.
Oh, yeah.
That is literally the hardest part. We settled on Sterile Daryl. And we
good one
never played a show, but we did rehearse.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then I just kept doing bands through high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then in college, I kind of came back one summer and did a band, and we made a record, and then that was it. We played one show, and then I just went back to like studying. And then right at the end of college, I was doing this year long electronic music production class. And from that kind of, from the projects I had to turn in for that class as a senior, I did the first Throw Me the Statue songs.
Oh, okay.
For the class. And then
after we graduated, the class.
Yeah, they were.
It was like the class project.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Did you get an A?
I did.
Nice.
I did.
I would hope so. Those are great songs.
Thanks, man. Well, you haven't heard those, but they they were, I was fond of them.
Good.
And yeah, and then I moved out to Seattle, and really, like, that's that summer after I graduated, I was here in a couple months after I graduated, and we started a little record label and started really like making music for real.
I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great. So when, take me back a little bit, like when you started playing guitar, was like, your brother's playing, so there was music around the house, obviously,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, were your parents, like, really musical, or did they...
No.
Did they play anything?
Mm-mm, no. I mean, my dad was a big music fan.
Okay.
So
he had, like, a bunch of, just a shitload of records.
Yeah.
Always playing music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was pretty early on with the CDs. I remember...
Oh, he was an early adopter.
Pretty early.
Big cardboard cases, everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I didn't... I don't really have... I have memories of records existing in the living room, but I know I don't have any memories of, like, flipping a record or touching one.
Really?
Yeah. No.
How old are you?
I'm 32.
32? Okay. We're about the same age.
Okay.
That's it. That... Huh. Mm-hmm. So he had just, like, a bunch of CDs then and tapes.
And
I
tapes.
Take it. Yeah.
Yeah, probably tapes. But yeah, I mean, I remember when I was, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6, buying... Paula Abdul and New Kids on the Block cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon after that, it was like a Beastie Boys CD and, you know, something else.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. So, I mean, it was as soon as I was pretty much dialed into like some form of pop culture, you could buy a CD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I remember when like CDs first came out and like you'd go to like, there was a store in Silverdale, Washington that was called Magnolia Hi-Fi.
Mm.
And you could go to this, or no, it was Silo.
Mm.
Silo.
Okay.
Was like one of the first ones.
Yeah.
And Sam Goody and stuff like that. But I remember walking into a Silo and CDs had like just started to come out. And like they had like three.
Yeah.
Three albums.
Yeah.
One was like Michael Jackson, Bad. And then, what was it? I want to say like Michael Bolton or Aretha Franklin or something like that, you know, just like contemporary, smooth jazz kind of stuff.
Totally. You know?
But I always remember that. There were like three CDs there. That was it.
Take your pick.
That was it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
My God. And now it's all digital and now we're like reverting back and everybody wants vinyl again.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you like vinyl?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't always have money to spend on it, but
I know it's expensive now.
I know, man. Yeah. It's like, come on. I love it. You know, I love, you know, what is it like? I want to get the new Flying Lotus record, but do I really want like a four-sided $42 awesome edition of it?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if I do or not. I would also like to buy groceries this week.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
You need to eat.
You gotta eat, man.
If you want to keep playing music, you have to eat.
Vinyl's great, but you cannot make a sandwich with it.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But you never have that the memory of like even just like those little picture books. Like, I'm reverting it back to Star Wars again, but, like, you know, the little Star Wars books, you know, you had, and then came with a record, and then you'd have to, it would like, beep, R2-D2 beep at you, and you'd have to, like, turn the record over and turn the page at the same time. Man, nothing?
No, you're totally blanking me on that. I've never even heard of that.
Oh, my God, they were the best.
Yeah.
They were the best.
I'm going to eBay that later.
There you go. Yeah. So you would say some of your main influences when you and I were the same age, or about the same age, Paula Abdul, New Kids on the Block.
Yeah.
Steeped in pop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Beastie Boys, License to Ill, kind of broke the whole thing wide open.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Bobby Brown, you know, the Bad Boys.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, that was when stuff got a little more sexy and exciting. It was funny, though, man. I was really into New Kids on the Block. And I have this... distinct. I have two
I
distinct
was
memories. You were?
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I was.
I'm
too.
Glad we shared that.
I'm always embarrassed to bring it up, but I was very into it.
God, and it's like you look back and you're like, I know it was so watered down.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it was bad, but I don't know. And I'm sure my parents probably wondered, like, Because my room, like, that I shared with my younger brother when I was younger, like, uh-huh. my corner of it was plastered in, like, torn out, you know.
Teen Bop and all that stuff. Totally.
And I would just put them all up on the wall. And I'm sure they were freaked out and they didn't necessarily know what that meant. I have two memories of the end of my New Kids obsession.
Mm-hmm.
One was, it was already a little bit waning and we had a babysitter that night. My parents were out and the babysitter was hip enough to know that that was not cool. And she was like, you know, if you're not really into it, why don't we just tear all of these things down? Because New Kids aren't really that cool. And in hindsight, it was kind of sad. And I think when my parents got home after we had torn all of them down, I sort of consented to this. I was like, oh yeah, you're right. You know, girl
babysitter.
Yeah.
Probably in high school or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was honestly okay. Like I wasn't super regretful or anything.
Uh-huh.
But I think my parents felt a little bit like, oh, that, you know, she shouldn't have done that.
Yeah,
you
know, totally.
Let the kid take his posters down when he wants to. But the other thing
but
was...
You always, there's always that point in your life where, like, you know, one of the big kids in town, like, tells you Santa Claus isn't real.
Right.
You know, that's how you find out, right?
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. I wish I remembered when that... I don't remember my Santa Claus story.
I don't remember either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I did.
Yeah.
I remember telling my little cousin.
Really?
When she was on a swing set.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she just bawled and ran away.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a high point.
Yeah. That makes me think, I was thinking about this the other day. I don't know why. I'm kind of a sports nerd and I was thinking about this old SportsCenter ad. I think it was a SportsCenter ad. And it was like a dude working a, oh God, what do they call it? What's the machine? A mammogram? Well, no, that's different.
A mammogram?
What's the thing? What's the machine they stick on your wife's tummy to tell you if it's a boy or a
sonogram.
Girl? A sonogram.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I always get them mixed up too. Okay. Don't worry. Yeah.
So there's like the husband and wife, you know, like, you know, in the hospital, and there's the male operator behind like a little curtain,
mm-hmm.
you know, being like, do you want to know what you're having?
Mm-hmm.
And they like look into each other's eyes and they're like, no, we're going to wait. And then he's just like, it's a boy. and then they look at each other just disgusted. And they pull back the curtain and he's just watching SportsCenter. Completely tuned out.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's totally what it is too.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But that's sort of like me once like Seahawks started up or like I just kind of can't be bothered. I'm pretty zoned in. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just zipping up my fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. So what was the second,
oh, right. So the second New Kids thing.
Nail
so,
in the coffin for the New Kids obsession.
I saved up the like $60 or whatever it was that you needed to buy a New Kids on the Block, black sort of like satin jacket, like a starter jacket.
Oh shit.
With a giant patch on the back, red New Kids on the Block logo.
Whoa, dude.
It was sick. And, but remember back in the day you ordered from these magazines and it was like, please wait 6 to 8 weeks for delivery.
Right, right.
Which boggles my mind. Like, I don't understand the macroeconomics involved with that and why that was different. And now Amazon can get you something tomorrow.
Right. Well, I don't think they were made yet.
Is that what it was?
I think to save money, they weren't even making them. They were just like, we'll see how many people buy them or something, maybe.
And then they
called it.
Malaysia and they were like, cool. Right. Put it on the boat.
Hey, we got one order for this jacket.
Well, so, anyway, I just remember by the time the fucking thing showed up, I was out, I was over it. And then that thing sat in my closet until, I don't know, I wish I still had it now, obviously.
Oh, God.
But I, you know, and it was such a fanboy statement that I was not comfortable with at that point. I don't think I ever wore it in public.
Yeah.
Just sat in
the closet. Least it took 6 to 8 weeks to get to you because, like, I mean, you had some time to kind of just sit there and think about your actions.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, in hindsight, it was probably my first most poignant experience with like, you know, like buyer's regret or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It's like, oh, I could have bought so many packs of baseball cards.
You could have. Yeah, you could have had a whole, you could have had like just a stack of really, really hard rock-like gum.
Oh, God, that gum.
That gum... So I mean, it used to come with everything. It came with the Ninja Turtles cards that I had,
mm-hmm.
you know, when the movie came out. And it was, I mean, it would just fall apart in your mouth.
I know.
And little shards of it get stuck in your gums, too. That was awful.
Where did they get... Like, that must have been just sitting and sitting for decades before they put it in that pack of bubble gum.
I think it was from the 50s. They found a whole sheet of this stuff that was, like, army surplus gum.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we got to do something with it. We can't waste it.
Yeah, it's bizarre. You know? I wonder if it's still like that.
Kids' cards. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Do cards even come with gum anymore?
I don't know. I think at least people are aware that cards are worth nothing and will never be worth anything at this point, which was the lie that none of us understood back when. I mean, I still have all of them. I still have all my cards.
Yeah.
And
what were you guys? Were you like a big top or top, what was it? Top or Dungeness?
Tops. There was Donruss, Upper Deck. Are we talking baseball card brands?
Yeah.
I mean, Upper Deck was always pretty creamy, and then Stadium Club was pretty cool.
What was the one that started with a D that you just said?
Donruss. Yeah.
Donruss. I always thought it said Dungeness.
No.
Oh man,
that is very Puget Sound of you. Yeah. No, Donruss.
I was like, oh, cool. Cards named after... I used to have a huge... I collected baseball cards because my friends were collecting baseball cards. That's the only reason I did it.
Okay.
And I had all these Donruss cards that I was like, hey, you guys want to trade some Dungeness cards?
Yeah.
So maybe that's why I didn't have any friends anymore after that. Okay.
You probably got swindled a lot. For some bad trades back in the day, too.
Oh, I'm sure I did. I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely. So you move from, let's try to get back on track here.
Yeah.
You move from New Kids on the Block into Beastie Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where does it go from there into grunge, right? Every kid our age got into the alternative rock scene here in Seattle.
Yep.
Right?
Sure. It was, it was a lot of, you know, it was actually kind of like half of the Seattle bands.
Uh-huh.
For me back then, growing up in California.
Sure, sure.
I mean, it was Nirvana, it was Alice in Chains, but it was not Pearl Jam.
Nope.
And it was... Later, it was Soundgarden. The Super Unknown record got me.
Yeah.
Can't remember how old I was. Middle school, I guess. Black Hole Sun
was
middle
school. Sure, yep.
I went to the second Lollapalooza and saw Metallica. It was definitely the Soundgarden year. I can't recall.
Okay.
But yeah, and then the kind of the more, you know, just like alterna rock stuff. I was I consumed a ton of that.
Yeah. I made a major left-hand turn when Pearl Jam started getting big and stuff. I went this way. Mm-hmm. We had one like a really one of my friends had a much older brother.
Yeah.
And he was all into like the Dead Milkmen and Sonic Youth and Pavement and you know, everything like that. So we kind of, you know, followed his footsteps because he was way cool.
Yeah, that's hip.
And played drums.
Yeah.
You know,
I wish I had known about Pavement that early.
I didn't right really, the they were kind of on the periphery for me. Like I didn't super know about them, but, you know, they were in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then early Built to Spill and stuff like
that. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool too, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got wrapped up in the San Francisco punk, you know, like the Fat Records kind of constellation of artists.
Yeah.
There was like, NoFX. God, there were so many of those bands. They were always kind of the ringleaders and I think they still are. I think NoFX can just like get on a Warped Tour whenever they want and headline it.
I would imagine. Yeah. They still got a lot of clout, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of music would you... I mean, that's like punk, right?
I guess so. I mean, I think of San Francisco punk as sort of like... It's definitely poppier.
Yeah.
It's definitely got...
Might be a little ska in there.
Yeah.
A
little more tongue-in-cheek sometimes, maybe.
Yeah.
Some of the LA stuff has always taken itself more seriously, I think.
So is that what you were playing?
Yeah, early on it was kind of that. It was like that pop punk stuff. And then when Green Day showed up, it was like Green Day for, you know, 2 years or something.
Right, right. Dookie. It was all about Dookie.
I mean, that record just slayed my young brain. It was so good. It was just like cocaine for a seventh grader.
Yeah.
God.
Well, let's do this. Scott, I'm having a great time talking with you.
Okay.
Because I'm like going down memory lane with you right now. This is amazing. But we do have to take our second musical break. So we're featuring music from your new album, self-titled Pillar Point, which is available now, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And where's the best spot for people to get this thing?
Probably, I'm trying to think.
Go to a show.
Go to a show. That's the best. Oh, that's the best.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Or you can go to pillarpointmusic.com.
Yes.
Because I'm guessing pillarpoint.com is actually the place.
Yeah, somebody, I think it's some whack job who has like a totally awful website.
Chemtrails. It's Chemtrails website. Yeah. Yeah, Chemtrails and New Kids on the Block conspiracy theory website. Okay, this is called Black Hole, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Scott Reitherman of Pillar Point. Stay with us. I was all about Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
That was
an amazing record. And then it just, I don't know, like it got too popular, and then they quit heroin, and it was like, why'd you guys do that? You know, because like you're not going to write a good record off of heroin.
I mean, I think if you would probably, if we were older and wiser when that Blood Sugar Sex Magic record came out, maybe we could have spotted it and said, this might be the only good thing they ever do.
Right.
Even now, because they've already done a couple sort of things that are like, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know, man. I would say after that album, everything went downhill.
Yeah.
Really fast.
Pretty quickly.
Like, I was not a fan of Californication when that came, or Californication.
I thought that had redeeming moments.
Do you?
Yeah.
My brother did, too, and I would argue with him endlessly over it. But he was more, he was kind of more of a pop guy anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I did not like any of it. And now it's just, like, totally unlistenable.
Yeah.
Garbage. You know?
You know, this is, to sidestep, but also to talk about something that, I don't know, is maybe contentious for some people, especially up here. When was the last time you put on a Nirvana record?
Long time.
For me, really long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I have tried to revisit it, to be totally honest, it just doesn't, I don't know if it ever will. I don't know if I ever will. I think I probably will appreciate it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There's been so much. And maybe it has to do with like kind of some of the Sub Pop anniversary stuff that's been happening over the last few years, and how they've really become now almost like a part label, part, I don't know. You know,
part
like,
cultural entity.
Yeah. Like there's almost this sort of like museum like element to their catalog, and now like their you know, their freaking store in the airport, and like,
oh sure.
Like, you know, there's all this celebration around Northwest music.
Well, I think part of it is that that crowd is now the people that I grew up with, and the generations ahead of me as well, that were steeped in that scene, are now to an age where they're looking back a lot on their past life.
Right.
And it's almost like, I don't know if you would really equate it to like a,
like a zeitgeist?
No. Like when an old guy goes out and buys a Corvette, he's going through midlife crisis.
There you go.
It's like everybody, it's a mass midlife crisis where everybody's looking back. I'm going to cut out that long. That's unbelievable. But yeah, it's like a mass midlife crisis. Everybody's going through it at the same time.
Right.
Or it's, you know, it's a little bit forced. Like they're like, hey, we want to release all this this old stuff that we've got. And you know, make a little bit more money and do it up, and you know,
yeah,
it is what it is.
No, I have no problem with that.
Yeah,
I just as a personal statement, I'm just sort of surprised at myself because I really loved Nirvana for a while,
mm-hmm.
and some of the stuff I loved from that period of my life, I can go back and still feel a feeling.
Sure, yeah.
Like a warm something. Or just really connect with it on another intellectual level as an adult now.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, I'm now kind of the same age or maybe a little older now than like what the guys were making that record.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a weird thing to think about.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When those guys like hit it big, I mean, shit, when Kurt Cobain killed himself, he was what, 26?
Yeah, I think so, 27, 26? 26, like
that. Like, yeah. So, like, I mean, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Like I'm 34 now.
Yeah.
Wow. Totally surpassed like how old that guy was.
I know.
So he must have struck it big. What? They were like huge for 2 years, right?
Yeah, 2 or 3 years, I think.
So 24. Yeah, I mean, imagine where you were at the age of 24.
Yeah, I mean, that's a trip. That's a totally insane trip.
Yeah, yeah. How old were you when Throw Me the Statue got signed on to Secretly Canadian?
25. Yeah.
So you were almost, I mean, you were kind of in the same place. You were getting a lot of good reviews on that, weren't you?
Yeah, that was a really cool.
That first record?
Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that felt really good.
How did all that come about? I mean, you were playing alone too, right? That was like a solo
record
kind project.
Of. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, basically it was. There was a drummer I was playing with. That played drums on a couple songs, and then I made the record partly with this guy named Casey Faubert, who's a super talented dude who now lives in Madison, and we did some of the production at his home studio in Bellevue, and then I just overdubbed a bunch of stuff at my house, and then he mixed the record, so he added some touches that I would not have been able to, like violin, and he called in some people to play like horns on it. That was pretty cool and definitely opened up some sonic elements to the record. But yeah, it was, you know, it's basically a solo record.
Yeah. What was going through your mind at the age of 25?
Yeah.
Little Scott Reitherman.
Yeah. What did I want? Like, what was I trying to say?
No. Cause I, in my mind, like I loved that record.
Oh, cool.
That record was so good. Thanks, and man. Like me and my wife would listen to it nonstop. Like it was in our car. It was like one of those CDs that we could put in our car and leave there.
Cool.
And every time we had to drive somewhere, we were listening to Throw Me a Statue because awesome. It was so good. Like it was just like, we don't even need to take this out, you know?
That's rad. I really appreciate
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And it, but I just imagine, like, cause you got a lot of good press on that and you got signed to a label like Secretly Canadian, which is a good, a pretty good indie label, right?
Yeah, to be super on. Good, yeah.
Like, I mean, that's got to be kind of a trip for a 24, 25-year-old.
Yeah, it was. It was, I mean, it was something I really, I just wanted it for a while. So when it started to finally kind of take shape and become something I could really sink my teeth into and devote, like, a lot of time to, and go on a tour and, you know, like, do these, you know, real band things or whatever, it was just all gravy.
Yeah. 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 Was it, I mean, exciting?
Yeah, it was super exciting.
Pretty exciting, right?
I mean, it was super humbling, too, you know? Playing live when you're, you know, at some point you have to cut your teeth playing live as a band. Mm-hmm. And obviously tour is a great way to do it because you're doing it every night and you get so much better. But there are nights when you suck or, you know, like there are, you know, you realize, oh, if we go on tour for a month, like, you know, my voice is going to sound like ass on night 7. And I didn't really think about that. I didn't realize that. Like, I got to, like, you know, you sort of just take your lumps and get used to the fact that, you're performing now a lot more.
Yeah.
And,
was that the first time that you had really toured and been in in a real band?
Yeah, definitely.
Really? Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. It is, man. Like, most of the people that we have back here, like, we'll talk about, you know, their first tour and stuff, and it's always in these little, you know, bands that didn't really go anywhere.
Right.
You
right.
are the complete opposite, where you were, like, signed, and then yeah. boom. Like, yeah. the first real band you're in yeah. is going off and doing it.
It was a trip, man. Our first, yeah. The first touring that we did a West Coast tour. It was just 4 shows.
Mm-hmm.
But we were opening up for Jens Lechman.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we just started, like, right out of the gates. We had 4 sold-out shows we got to open up.
My God.
And he was...
How many people?
We were 5-piece at that point. And
No. Audience-wise.
Oh, audience-wise?
Yeah. What are you playing from?
We were playing to probably, I don't know, like 500 people maybe a
night.
Wow.
700. Nervous?
Yeah, a little nervous. And, I mean, his show was so good.
Yeah.
It was just a treat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was rolling in every night with a 10-piece thing.
Sure.
And it was him, you know, he's Swedish.
Uh-huh.
The whole band is Swedish. But it's him and, like, 9 Swedish women backing him up.
Yeah.
And they're all wearing white, and it just looks so good on stage.
Yeah.
And they're all such great players. And he's just such an entertainer that it was both very exciting and very alarming in some ways, because it was like, oh shit, we have to be so much better than we are.
Like, well, that's what I was going to say. Like, you must be like trying to, like, squeeze your mind, you know, wrap your mind around what's going on. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, we got a lot to learn.
Yeah. Like, it's not just blogs liking your songs.
Right.
And now
right.
You got a record. Cool. But it's like,
oh shit.
So, but yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was really fun back then. Mm-hmm. And then kind of doing some touring and then jumping back in and trying to make another record and then doing more touring. And, I don't know. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
And how many records did Throw Me the Statue have then? Was it just the
2 full lengths and an EP?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And why did that kind of come to an end? What closed that project down?
Well, at the end of the second record campaign, I moved with my girlfriend to Los Angeles to sort of change things up and switch it up and be closer to my family in California.
Sure, sure.
Try out a new city, try out some nice weather, because LA was totally pretty new to me.
Yeah.
In living down there and trying to write new songs and, you know, write the next Throw Me the Statue record, it started to kind of shapeshift. Like, musically, like, where my head was at, what I was into, it got a little more synthesizer-y. And then out of nowhere, my parents divorced. Like, my parents split.
Oh, wow.
And so I moved back to Half Moon Bay to, like, keep my mom company for a while and just deal with that.
Yeah.
And
you pretty broken up about that?
Yeah, it sucked. It was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was
just kind of just out of the blue. Like you had no idea anything was going on.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then in living at home again, I don't know. I guess obviously I was reconnecting with so many parts of my childhood. Cause it, like I said, I grew up in the same house my whole life, you know?
Sure.
So like,
and your mom stayed there for a little while.
And so like, living in my old bedroom again and, it just like completely shook the little snow globe up. And, I started writing darker songs.
Yeah.
And in doing that, it started to turn into this other sort of thing.
Right.
Because Throw Me the Statue had always been, even against my intentions a lot of the time, I think it was always sort of, people received it as sort of a summery, poppy sure. thing.
I would agree with that.
It was always trying to be pop, but
yeah, yeah.
So it just seemed like I think just life was going in another direction.
Yeah.
And then I moved back to Seattle after doing, I don't know, I think I was in Half Moon Bay again for like almost 6 months.
Was your girlfriend with you at your parents' house too?
No, she moved back to home. She's from Guam.
Oh, okay.
And so she moved back there for a little while, mm-hmm. To also do her family thing.
Yeah.
So when I moved back to Seattle to make this next record with my Throw Me the Statue bandmate, Charlie Smith, he was going to produce it. It was going to be a solo record again, kind of like the first Throw Me the Statue record. I was going to try and get back in touch with some sort of personal quality.
Right. Playing all the instruments yourself and that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part. Although Charlie's a great keyboard player. So he was going to like do keyboard things that I couldn't do.
Cool. Cool.
But, and so when we like really started making the next record in earnest, it started to turn into something that we were aware of as being something different.
Right.
And so turning it into Secretly Canadian, it just seemed like, I think to everybody involved that it was a different thing, but we had, I guess always had a fan in Polyvinyl and they had felt like they had sort of missed an opportunity to sign Throw Me the Statue at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
which we sort of were aware of, I guess, because our manager and publicist back in the early days had always worked with Polyvinyl as well. So we had kind of a line on that. And then we were like, all right, well, let's send them the record.
Yeah.
And they were into it. And it also gave us time to go back in and remake. So I made like half the record anew with completely new songs.
This record.
This
right
one.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Excuse me. So half of the songs are songs that were not on the thing that I thought were part of the record when I thought I was done with
gotcha,
it.
Gotcha.
So it really, I mean,
did like, it start it out
quite,
as
quite an odyssey of finishing this record.
Oh God, it sounds like it. Yeah. But it, I mean, did it start out as, cause I've heard things saying that this is somewhat of a concept album, right?
I wouldn't say that.
No,
no.
On a lot of the songs have to deal with like social media.
Oh well, I touch on some of those themes.
Okay,
but
it's not a third. It's not a through line through the through the whole album.
No, I think it's just a. I think it's. I mean, I don't know. For me, I just think of it as like a very personal record, and dealing with things like technology and the internet and being. Lonely or being like, oh, I miss this person. I'm going to look at them on the internet, you know, are just parts of my life. And I think a lot of people's lives. So in that way, talking about some of that stuff, some of those themes are for me, just kind of
what I'm
thinking about.
Yeah, sure.
And a lot of the songs are about, relationship stuff, not going well. And all of that stuff was, extensions of my life.
Yeah. I mean, there are touches that makes a lot of sense to me, because there are a lot. I've been listening to this album a lot, and I really, really enjoy it as
cool,
well.
Thanks.
I urge everybody to go and buy a copy of Pillar Point now. Yeah, there are touches. There are touches of like Throw Me the Statue in there. You can little parts where that like.
Sure.
You know, happy kind of pop sound comes through, the dancey pop, you mm-hmm. know, comes through. But it's intertwined with this like lower level darkness.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole album.
Cool. Yeah.
Which I found was very, very good.
Thank
and
you.
When I read this article, and it was just today.
Okay.
It was some interview with you recently. And talking about some of the songs that deal with like the loneliness that comes from the overarching loneliness that can come from social media, like, you know, focusing in on stuff like people posting pictures of them at the beach,
right.
You know, and you're like looking at that and you're like, oh, well, I'm
right.
not at the beach.
Right.
You know, really struck a chord with me. And so
yeah.
I listened to that album like differently on my way home today. Like I was like searching for that kind of. That through line. And so that's why I kind of thought like, oh, maybe this is like some sort of concept album that you were creating here.
I mean, in that way it definitely is. I guess
yeah.
when I think of that term, I think of something that's a little bit more I don't know, fictional or
sure,
or,
sure. Yeah.
You know.
Okay. Yeah.
And for me it's very much
no, that
like
makes sense. Yeah, totally.
Nonfiction.
Yeah. A lot of the times when I say things, they don't end up making any sense. So that's fine.
I know what you mean.
Good. Good. Like I said before we started recording, I think we've got a lot in common. Yeah, yeah. Well, the album is fantastic, man. Are you happy with how things have turned out and like you know, where this album's at?
I am. I mean, I would love it if like, you know, everyone bought 10 extra copies of it. But I think that's probably what every band wants.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
But yeah, I mean, we've gotten some really cool opportunities. Like I'm super happy to be with Polyvinyl.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to just have another crack at it and go back out on tour. I think that the live show now is far and away like the best live show I've ever put together
yeah.
with a band. You know, we've got visual projections and we've got just a much more complicated technological thing. It's really a beast to assemble it every night, and
yeah.
it's cool because now we know it, and it's sort of muscle.
You've got
memory.
It dialed in,
yeah. But it's great, and it's cool to you know, kind of like what you were saying about some of the darker themes. Like it's cool for me to be able to interject some of those ideas lyrically into a song that on its face is a dance pop tune. And so we can get people literally dancing at the shows, and I can feel good about both the energy that's swirling around
mm-hmm.
and also the fact that it doesn't feel like a sort of vapid dance experience.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
I love the cathartic elements of dance. You know,
uh-huh.
I love sweating it out, moving your body, you know, getting blissed out on a loud sound system. Like all of those things are great. And so much of the music that people associate with those experiences are musics I really don't have much respect for. You know, it's just very bubblegum, sugar-coated EDM, dance, whatever, you know. So I liked kind of playing with that trope, I guess, and live, it's been really exciting. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to making things kind of even dancier, I think, as the next songs start to unfurl. And
well, I look forward to hearing it, man.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, and it's an honor to have you here. Thank
dude,
you so much for
I really
coming.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, totally. So you can find out more about Pillar Point at pillarpointmusic.com. You can also find them on Facebook and Twitter,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And we will be back in Seattle coming through on a tour. We're opening a Of Montreal tour in the month of October.
Oh, you're yeah, that's right. You're
yeah.
playing with them.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's gonna
I'm
be-
gonna try to get Of Montreal on the show as well.
Oh, cool.
So
you
I
should.
Might be seeing you soon
All
again.
Right, cool.
Down at the venue. So when are those shows coming up?
That's the whole month of October.
Whole month of October,
from
and you're going on tour.
From the 1st to the end. And we'll be in Seattle, I believe, October 12th at the Neptune.
Yeah, we got national listeners, too. So make sure gotcha. You check that out. And go to, once again, pillarpointmusic.com and check out the tour dates. Once again, thank you very much, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
And you can find out more about us, www.air-raid.net on the web. And also on Facebook and Twitter. You can follow us at those places. You can email me, Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net, if you want to complain about me sounding like Marc Maron. But I'll tell you what, I'm not going to answer those emails. All right? Okay, we're going to go out today with the song Echoes off of Pillar Point. By Pillar Point. It's so easy. It's so easy to remember. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Have a great week.